step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 669. I am Lisa Sheps. I am joined by my steady and stalwart co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
You're listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. We are streaming this puppy live today in May on KOOP.org. Don't go away.
Hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and rage.
It is Wednesday, May 18th, 2022. On the show today, we have the Georgetown Palace Theater and The Odd Couple, the female version. And then later, we're going to be talking to Zach's Theater and Somebody Loves You, Mr. Hatch. And of course, Nicole and I and our multitude of guests will have a lively discussion about the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, Leander, and Georgetown. Don't go away.
Take me there and make me a part of it. Make
me see those lights and sights shining me. Make.
It's so funny. We haven't played anything from that in a long time.
We haven't. And you know what? It's all over the news. Tell people what show that's from.
That's The Fantastics.
That is Los Fantasticos. Yes.
Yes.
Well, okay, our studio audience just laughed, but you laugh, but I actually toured with Los Fantasticos in 1980.
Ask her what she toured with, what else she toured
what
with.
What else did you tour with?
I toured with Los Fantasticos, La Celestina, which is the show that Romeo and Juliet was based upon, and Zuiloico de Cristal.
Oh.
Anybody?
Nice.
Anybody know what that is?
No.
Well, one paper described it as Tennessee Williams' Crystal Zoo.
Crystal Zoo, that's right. Translation.
Let's introduce the folks that are here with us from Georgetown Palace Theater. We have Molly Fonseca. Hi, Molly.
Hello.
I probably don't have... Wait, hold on. No, Michael Paddock. Hi.
Hello.
And Julian Naramore.
How's it going?
Or as we like to call him, Naramore.
Exactly. With the hands.
Well, you have to do the hands. Amy Crowell.
Hello.
And Nikki Wheaton.
Hello.
Wonderful, wonderful. So there's so much stuff. So first of all, I have to say, Kim Simpson in that International Folk Bazaar.
Spinning up another good hour of music.
Spinning them up. So The Fantastics is in the news twice.
It is.
Los Fantasticos. That's why I did it up at the very beginning.
I figured.
And of course, there is an Austin connection to The Fantastics. Does everybody know that?
Tell us, Lisa, tell us.
She falls over the crowd.
Well, I'm surprised you don't know this, but Tom Jones and Harvey Schmidt are UT alumni, mm-hmm. and they created the show at UT.
Oh, cool.
So there you go.
Theater history for you.
There you learn so much here on this show.
Lisa and I, random wonderful facts.
But there's a couple things that I like here. Number one is there's going to be a new recording starring Brad Oscar, Telly Leung, and Elizabeth Teeter, among others,
yes.
of the entire show, not just the music.
Isn't that cool?
So it's a new cast report. Yeah, I think that's great.
I think it's kind of cool. Yeah, I saw that and I was like, wait, because I had to do a double take. I'm like, oh, it's like the whole kit and caboodle.
Of course, this is the revised version because, you know, there's very politically incorrect. Particularly politically incorrect number that they changed. And some people still do it with the old way, which is crazy.
Yes.
And I don't understand that. Anyway, so I'm going to come up with a word.
Okay.
Statistics, a quiz.
Oh, okay.
So The Fantastics opened at the Sullivan Street Playhouse ages ago in the 60s somewhere, and it played until 2002 when it closed, and then it reopened off-Broadway, which is weird because it was off-Broadway to begin with.
I was like, it was off-Broadway. But, I mean, the Sullivan Street Playhouse is kind of weird in the West Village. Like, you pass it, and I loved it.
The wonderful thing about the Sullivan Street, and here's a little bit more Fantastics lore. So somewhere around the when it first opened, people came late and their seats happened to be on. So the stage is a little square stage. It's very much like Hyde Park, except there are seats on the other side of the stage. So you have to walk through the stage to get to those seats. And they, I'm assuming inadvertently, people came in late and they walked through and the cast just stopped, broke character, looked at them as they got to their seats, silently commented to each other, and then moved on. And then from that point forward, they kept it in. They would hold people back specifically so that gag could happen.
Love it. Love it.
Great. Okay, so with all that said, now you remember all the facts I gave you before. Guess how many total performances in New York the Fantastics had?
A lot, because that's
it's
like
more than 10. Decades. I'll give you a hint.
I kind of want to lowball it and be like, 29.
29 what?
Performances.
29 performances. Okay. In 40 years?
I said I was going to lowball.
That's a good run.
Yeah.
Nobody want to take a guess?
1,000?
Get right up on that microphone.
1,000?
1,000. Okay, try.
I'm going to say millions. It's in the millions.
No, that's the other direction. 21,000. 552.
Wow. That's a lot.
Dang. That's amazing. That's amazing.
That's fantastic.
It is. Oh. It is Los Fantastic. Okay, so that's the Fantastics, and there are great stories that we've talked about on here. The one story I really love, and I know I've said it here, but Jerry Orbach, that was his breakthrough role. We all miss Jerry Orbach, but he had, when he was offered the Fantastics, he was offered a chorus role on a Broadway show, and he was offered this role on this little crazy. Not even off Broadway at the time. It was nothing.
It still looks so weird out of it. My favorite Italian restaurant used to be across the street, so I would go save by it like time. 7 times.
But he opted for the Fantastics, and it changed his life.
Wow. Yeah.
Instead of just being a chorus boy. But he'll always be a chorus boy in my heart. let's see what else.
Mr. Cellophane. I mean.
Oh, yeah. I deleted it from my thing, but I forgot the other Fantastics news is. Oh my gosh, I wish I knew where it was. And I'm doing my computer a different way, so I can't get to it easily. But there's another production of the Fantastics in, I believe it's Michigan. I could be wrong.
Like Midwest, but I can't.
That are doing it with a gay couple. Mm-hmm. It is Tom Jones is in, or Harvey Schmidt, who's still alive. Anyway.
What did the gents?
One of them is involved in the rewrite. And it's interesting. I was just talking to a friend of mine just yesterday about the propensity of doing shows like The Odd Couple and switching genders, but more importantly, taking heterosexual couples and turning them into gay couples. And my friend made a really good point. The dynamics between a same-sex couple and the dynamics between an opposite-sex couple are very different.
Uh-huh.
So you can't really just change the gender of one of the characters and make that work. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. But oftentimes people do that.
At least you're getting deep over there.
I know. I know. The LA Times had an article. One article is amazing. They haven't had a
They're working hard.
It's like in the 40 years of their being in there, this is their fifth article. that's a callback. but the title, and this, I feel this here in Austin. It says, theater is back, but recovery is perilous. Talking about how we're now back in the theater. Most restrictions are gone, but still we're struggling to get audiences. Mm-hmm. Revenue is hard to get, and it's costing more to do. So mm-hmm. It's
a lot of factors.
It's really difficult. As someone who just put on a production at their theater, the lumber, all those things way up. Those of us who live in Austin, all of our rents have skyrocketed mm-hmm. because of taxes. This article is really based that on LA, but I think it's translatable almost anywhere.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of relatable things in it for everyone.
So some of the things it said, and this is a nationwide thing, a consulting firm called McKinsey & Company suggested that it can take more than 5 years for the most effective sectors of the U.S. economy, including the arts, to get back to 2019 level.
Oof.
So I think
5 years is be, that's where I was going. I'm like, I thought 10. So I'm like, well, that was very conservative with 5.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, jazz hands.
And she says ironically, and you know, we all know that few economies were hit harder than the performing arts. So, yikes. And that's it. That's all I want to say about it. But
that
it's
was
just,
their
it
article?
Just, it's, well, there's more. And no, people can find it at offstageonair.com. Oh. You can click on it and see the article on the LA Times. If there is a paywall, but if you do it, if you click our link, which is a link through the Broadway briefing, it ignores the paywall. Because the first thing I do usually is get rid of the Broadway briefing. Sorry, Broadway briefing.
Little thing at the bottom.
And go straight to the source. But this time, the straight to the source said, I don't think so. You don't rate. Fork over the dough, it said. And
you should get a few free articles a month. Oh, you must have passed that limit.
I'm not at the LA Times, evidently. All right. And then, so here's another interesting art. Oh, well, I want to talk about this first. Take Me. We talked about Take Me Out and the cameras. Is everybody familiar with Take Me Out, the Broadway, Broadway revival? Mm-hmm. All of a sudden I thought, is it off Broadway?
No,
it's on Broadway. Mm-hmm. It's a revival. So Jesse
Williams,
thank you. There's a nude scene, a shower scene. They have the policy of putting your phone in one of those plastic bags.
I think it's like the yonder,
wordle. It's a wordle packet. But anyway, somebody easily figured out a way to either smuggle in a camera or get anything. They took pictures and they posted it of these nude scenes. We talked about this last week, mm-hmm. So I'm not going to go into that. But one of the things that they did, and they had cameras beforehand that they would watch the audience during that scene to mm-hmm. see what's happened. But now they've added infrared cameras mm-hmm. and point tilt zoom cameras. Mm-hmm.
I get it, but yet the whole thing disturbed me overall, not just from theater, but I also
kinda
know
George
things
George Orwellian.
Yeah, it just was like, it made me, I stopped and read it, and I was like, this is so disturbing, and yet I get it, yet it's disturbing. I did not like that article. And I found it weird that they were watching us in the first place, and my brother's first response was, before they put in the infrared cameras, if they were already watching the audience, is there a notice up saying that they're watching you? Because
I'm sure
that needs to be up. And I was like, oh, that's a good question. And this whole thing just opens more
questions. I'm sure there is. And yet, I don't know that they need to, because this is a public space. There's cameras all over the street, and there's no signs.
Yeah, in New York State with the laws, you do need to tell someone with that thing. Even though it's a one-party consent for recording on listening devices. Mm. Very bizarro, I know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I actually don't, I mean.
I get it.
I get it.
Theater is a safe, sacred
because,
space.
Because they were violated by these audience members who, as we talked last week, they have a contract about how they should, you know, some common decencies mm-hmm. that should go on. So I don't know. I'm back and forth. But what I found mm-hmm. interesting is, so when they get to that scene, and the idea is they were going, Molly Fonseca in row 4 looks suspicious. we're gonna zoom the camera over to her and wait for the scene to happen. And the scene happens, and the infrared camera goes on, and we catch you in the act. So they have two choices. They could either stop the show or have the ushers remove the patron, or call the cops.
Uh-huh. It's so bizarro. Which is
none of them seem like a good option.
That's where I was like, well, the options don't seem great. And then I was like, I understand, you know, I'd house managed before, so I was like, well, if I saw someone with a camera and I pay attention, that's no bueno in the first place, because that's not acceptable with or without nudity. Yep. So I don't know. I'm torn with you back and forth on it. And yeah.
Okay. By a show of hands, raise your hand if you're a theater snob. Okay. I am. I'm totally a theater snob. And those of us that have lived in New York and on Broadway, you know, once upon a time, they used to have standing room tickets for like $20. You can go stand in the back.
I know where you're going with this.
I heard about this as well, yeah.
Yeah, so, which I won't do. I said, I'm not going to stand.
I never did it.
But it was, you know, it was for poor, you know, for those of us that were really struggling for money and we wanted to see.
It was not only that, it was also for shows like Lion King when you couldn't get a ticket. You had the $35 standing
room. But in general, in my...
Hairspray.
Right. But what I'm talking about is just normal shows. They're standing room tickets, typically for people that can't afford a full price ticket. So the Music Man has added standing room tickets at $76.
Yep.
Yeah.
For 76
trombones.
One
for every trombone.
Yeah. But I heard about this the other day.
But here's the deal. That's not... I'm not going to stand for $100 to see a show. Exactly.
So I got angry about it at first, and I thought, and I didn't do standing room for these, but Hairspray standing room was $40-something. But I'm saying in 2000.
I'm saying that's a lot of money.
Wow.
Yeah. That's
yeah.
too much.
And it's that same premise of like, I mean, I love you, Harvey Fierstein, but you are no Hugh Jackman. They're just very different type of like people.
No,
and you
I
have
think Harvey Fierstein's like 75 pounds heavier than Hugh Jackman.
One's like this showman. One's this very.
We got it. That was just
in the acting.
Fun.
I love both of them. They both rock my world. But then you have like all this extra. You had the new young on. You know, ingenue everyone discovered versus Sutton Foster and Hugh and the economy. So then I was like, I guess it's normal, but you wouldn't catch me standing to do that.
No,
you probably wouldn't catch me at the Music Man anyway, and you know that I'm obsessed with anything Hugh does. Okay. So
well, so that's a whole nother story.
As I stand here, right? And as I stand here, he's looking
that's,
at you.
That's a whole nother story.
There he is.
I'm going to tell our listening audience that my co-host on this show is showing visuals on a radio show.
I did.
And she knows better than that.
Well, it was just Hugh Jackman on my back staring at you.
Yeah, we know. But so in the same article, they mention a good thing that I think they're doing. They're giving away 10,000 tickets at $20 each for New York City students and their teachers.
Yes.
So now that is a good thing. And they get to sit their little heinies in a chair.
Right. Yes. And sitting and going, I've been in some of those performances where all the students are there. I think the last one I was at was a Harvey Fierstein show, actually. At Casa Valentina, it was all a lot of the students, mm-hmm. and I sat amongst them down in the orchestra, and just the experience to hear them and be a part of the talk back afterwards. So cool.
Well, we know how I feel about talkbacks.
With students, I get it.
This is the way I feel about talkbacks.
I know.
That being said, Ground Floor Theater's having a talkback on Friday night. So the last thing we have time to talk about, there's so much more here, and I do leave everything that we were going to talk about on the website. So if you want to see and get the articles of things that we were going to talk about, and including a very interesting article on representation that I don't necessarily agree with that would have bared some explanation. But go ahead and check those out at offstageonair.com. But the last thing I want to talk about, and this has come up in my conversations lately, I don't know about yours, but Jason Robert Brown's parade,
mm-hmm.
As part of City Center's gala, they're doing, it's got to be, they just say they're doing parade, but it's got to be a concert.
Lisa, that was the same question I had. I'm like, so is it a concert? Or are you doing it?
But
I
mean, I'm kind of excited about the stars.
Yeah, and I think a concert would work.
Yep, I do. Ben Platt, who everybody knows who Ben Platt is, and Michaela Diamond, who I don't know, but she's also a Tony Award winner.
Mm-hmm.
She was in the... Oh, I did see her. I saw her in the Cher show. So she was in the Cher show, the movie Tick, Tick, Boom, and of course, our lovely Jesus Christ Superstar that
can't get
was just
enough.
Amazing. Yeah.
Can't get it. 50 years and still one of the greatest of all time.
So this was done both at what I find interesting is whether they're going to do the Broadway version that starred Brent Carver and Carolee Carmello,
mm-hmm.
or they can do the Donmar Warehouse version, which is the better and more recent version, I think.
Tis a question.
Tis a question. I'll call Ben and ask.
We might find out before they do it.
We might. Anyway, it is going to be at the City Center. I don't know whether it will be viewable by any way by the people. I bet you
they'll give us a little bit of some rehearsal footage some nugget.
Yeah, but it's dear to my heart because it's the first musical that Ground Floor Theater did.
And did quite well.
So let's take a break. and listen to a little bit of the Broadway version, hear The Falling Rain from Parade, and then we'll come back and talk to our dear friends at Georgetown Palace Theater. Don't go away.
Hey, yeah. Yeah. Hey, yeah.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with me, Lisa, and
me, Nicole,
and Amy, and Nikki,
and Julian,
and Michael,
and Molly.
Okay, I want to just say what good direction takers these people are.
Well, you know.
They had no idea I was going to do that.
You also point with such passion.
I do. Well, we do. We have part of the cast of The Odd Couple that's happening at Georgetown Palace Theater and the director here with us. I'm going to reintroduce you all. We have the director, Molly Fonseca. Welcome back to Offstage and On the Air.
Yes, thank you.
And then I'm going to introduce Felix and Oscar, but their names are, you tell me your names when I tell you your name. So Nikki, who are you playing and what's your?
I'm Nikki Wheaton and I am playing Olive.
Olive. Olive Unger?
No, that's Florence.
Olive Unger. Madison.
Yes.
Okay, so sorry.
You know what?
And Amy?
You got both those last names. That was like...
Wow. I know my odd couple.
My name is Amy Crowell, and I am playing Florence Unger.
And Michael and Julian, we did not discuss your characters before the show, but I just hope you're playing the Pigeon Sisters.
Yes, close.
Okay, so Michael, who are you playing?
I am Manolo Costasuela.
Oh,
okay.
And Julian?
And I am his very dear brother, Jesus Costasuela.
And are y'all indeed analogs of the Pigeon Sisters?
Pretty much.
Yes.
Funny. Yeah, funny. But funnier, of course.
Very much so.
Okay, great. Well, so Molly, tell us about this show.
Yeah, it's The Odd Couple, and if we could, you know, just strike the words, the female version from the title, but
yeah,
unfortunately
really
we can't, but it is The Odd Couple. Neil Simon did write it, and it takes place in the 80s, and it's a group of women, and then the two fellas that come in. So, I mean, it's basically the same show, but I think it's funnier with a bunch of women running around.
Well, yeah, because women are funnier than men.
We notice.
Call it out there. Were you a... Well, two questions that are completely different. So
Whatever. You're just on fire today, Lisa.
Were you familiar with The Odd Couple?
Yeah.
To begin with?
Odd Couple was actually the first show that I worked on when I was in college.
Oh, my.
I was the assistant stage manager.
That's awesome.
So, yes.
You were backstage getting them props in place.
Man. So many props, so many food props, getting that spaghetti off the floor, all of that stuff.
And did you bring this to Georgetown or did Georgetown come to you?
Georgetown came to me. There was kind of a serendipitous thing in the universe that the other director had to drop out. And so they asked me to step in. And it really was meant to be, I feel like. It was a perfect situation for me to take this role or take this position directing.
Wonderful.
That's awesome.
Amy and Nikki, were y'all familiar with The Odd Couple? And how is it to... Because those roles, I dislike using the word iconic because it's way overused.
I get it.
But these are iconic roles.
It's Felix hard and to Oscar, say anything else.
You
when
cannot
it's
say
that
Felix and Oscar
iconic.
Without knowing what it is. So how was it challenging to take on these iconic roles with a twist?
Absolutely. I agree that they are very iconic. I have not gone back and watched anything. I kind of didn't want to. I was like, I'm going to go in with a whole new set of eyes and just do what feels right. I feel like we've changed some things and played with some things. And because it's women, there's a lot more feelings involved. I don't know. What do you think, Amy?
So my high school did the female version and the older version, like a double feature.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so it was interesting going and watching both shows and seeing how it played out back then. And then getting involved in this show, immediately people know the characters. You mention it. They're like, oh, Oscar and Felix. I'm like, well, no, it's not. It's a different thing. Mm-hmm. And I've really enjoyed just trying to humanize my character because my character is so uptight and cranky and almost inhuman at times. So that's been really, it's been really a fun challenge, like making her nuanced and not just a caricature
Right, which is tough. And that's probably even tougher for the gentlemen, Michael and Julian, because I've never seen the female version, but I know the Pigeon Sisters, and they are archetypal, stereotypical, and if you play comedy that way, it doesn't work. You have to play it as an actor. You have to play it real. How is that for you guys?
Interesting.
Okay, thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, I don't know how to explain it. It's Spaniards, the Spanish brothers that we play, and it's, first of all, challenging just to even sound right, much less act right. But they're such Lotharios that it is fun to cartoon it up.
And definitely, like, at rehearsals and stuff, when we're rehearsing for it, you know, they're too big is not a thing. It's just the most big, like, stupid, crazy thing ever. So it's definitely a lot of fun. But definitely, I would think more entertaining than the girls in the older version. Definitely.
Well, one could, you know, that was, what's her name from the, I forgot her name. Never mind. In the TV series, one of the Cicely Pigeon was...
Oh.
What's her name that was in What's the Call? You know.
Yeah.
That woman in that show.
Yeah,
she was good.
Her. Agreed.
So you guys are prepared to do a little scene, yes?
Yes.
Molly, do you want to set it up?
Yeah, this is, how to say this?
I don't know.
Giving away too much from the scene here. Olive has some needs, and she's convinced Florence to have a date night, which she's not very excited about. And this is just a little bit of their date night.
Wonderful. I'm going to ask the actors to take over Molly's mic and Nicole's mic. And we will listen to Nikki Wheaton, Amy Crowell, Michael Paddock, and Julian Naramore doing a scene from Georgetown Palace Theater's production of The Odd Couple.
I'm very much impressed with your home, Olivia.
Oh, you like it?
Like it? No. Love it. It's beautiful. Like an El Greco.
Who?
El Greco. The painter, no?
I don't remember who painted it.
Oh, you lied to me, Olivia. You say it is too sloppy here to invite us? It's not too sloppy.
Well, since then, I have a woman who cleans... every day.
I have the same thing. It's Jesus.
It's true. I like my house very clean. Manolo and I are very different. I am neat. He is not. I am always on time. He is always late. It's very difficult to live together. You understand?
I've heard of people like that. Yes. You've heard of people like that too, Florence, huh?
Oh, you mean El Greco. The great Spanish painter.
See, yes. You wish to go back a little in the conversation.
Oh, no. I caught up. Thanks.
Well, this is really nice. I was telling Flo the other day how we met.
Ah, yes. Who is Flo?
She is.
I am.
Flo is short for Florence.
No. She is not too short. No.
Oh, no. Her name is.
Oh, I see. Oh, her name is Too Short. Too
Short. No. It's a nickname. My name is Olive, but sometimes they call me Ollie. It's shorter.
Ollie is shorter than Olive?
It's a tricky language.
You know, El Greco means the Greek.
See, we speak Spanish.
Oh. I was talking about art. I read about it in a travel guide. He was from a city called Toledo.
Toledo.
Oh, I thought it was Toledo.
No, it's pronounced Toledo.
Oh. She says Toledo, you say Toledo. She says tomato, you say tomato.
We have a Toledo. A Toledo, Ohio.
No, I think it's Toledo.
Oh.
You see, Castilian Spanish, you pronounce different in English. Barcelona is Barcelona. San Jose is San Jose. Very, very good vitamins is very, very good vitamins. So,
They have very, very good bites in San Jose, but very, very bad vodka martinis in Barcelona. I do good, Jesus.
Very, very nice.
Oh, my God, that's so much fun. I have to say that I felt like I was on the coast of Mallorca at the time. What fun. This must have been fun to put together.
Oh, yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
Lots of giggling.
Lots of giggling going on.
Yeah, and we worked really hard to... It was really important to me that we bring out some really great female comedy and just the way that we women are when we're just in a group of women. So there's some dirty jokes. There's a lot of butt slapping. There's some bra stuff. So we really had fun hamming it up in that way.
It's interesting that bra stuff was my sorority name in college.
Ba-dum-bum-ch.
Tun, tun, tun. Well, this is great. We've had so much fun with you guys. Tell me when you open, how long you're playing, and where folks can go to get information.
We open Friday, May 20th.
Yikes! That's in 2 days.
It is in 2 days. And we run until June 19th. It's Friday, Saturdays, and Sundays. If you would like to, you could check out the website and, you know, think about buying a ticket.
And what is that website?
GeorgetownTheaterPalace.com.
It's GeorgetownPalace.com.
I always love it. Details in my brain floating around. We open in 2 days. I'm sorry about that.
We're very prepared.
I always love it when I know the website better than our guests too.
I feel like that's a game.
We've had so much fun. So let me ask you two final questions before I let y'all go. I never want to let you go. Are there any COVID mitigations in place? What can audiences expect from a masking vaccine perspective coming out there?
It's Williamson County. So we have removed those recommendations. But if you would like to wear a mask, you definitely can.
Okay. And then the final question. Oh, right. So back in the day, Georgetown Palace was just one stage. And now you're several stages. Are y'all on the big stage or are you on the not so big stage?
We have three stages
now. Oh, my Lord.
We have a brand new education building, so we're just taking over the square area. We are in the Playhouse because they're rehearsing for the Drowsy Chaperone in the big main stage coming up.
Oh, yes, that's lots of people.
We love the Drowsy Chaperone.
We do love that.
Somebody accused me of not liking it the other day, and I said, nay.
Who verily, said that you are to wrong. You? Yes, I would have defended your honor.
Fie, I say. speaking of that, I believe, well, yeah, we'll talk. It's the last weekend people can see Midsummer Night's Dream, I believe, at the...
At the park.
At the park. The joke's on Austin Shakespeare in that, you know, they do this Shakespeare in the Park at a time when it's usually not horrifically hot. And
this year was not that.
Yeah. Not that at all. All right, so we're going to take a break. Thank you guys so much for coming on the show, and we can't wait to have y'all back, and I can't wait to see the show.
Thank you.
All right, that was Molly Fonseca, Nikki Wheaton, Amy Crowell, Michael Paddock, and Julian Naramore, Georgetown Palace's production of The Odd Couple from May 20th through June 19th. For more information, you may visit GeorgetownPalace.com. We'll be right back. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and...
Nicole.
And Lisa. I'm here twice.
It's Sheps and
We just spoke to the folks from Georgetown Palace Theater and their production of The Odd Couple, the female version. They're walking out the door and I'm going to say...
We're waving...
Au revoir.
Au revoir.
Au revoir.
Buenas tardes.
Buenos tardes. And this actually doesn't really belong in the local section.
But you put it in there. You're mixing it up.
Put it in there anyway because it has a local connection.
It's a little bit of pizzazz.
You sent this to me and it was also in the Broadway briefing. It's the only theater in Maryland. They're doing a production of The Music Man with in both ASL and in English. And it is being co-directed by the person, I'll come up with the name as soon as my computer turns back on, and Sandra May Frank.
And Sandra May Frank, yes.
Who, late of Austin, currently just kicking Heine on that TV show.
New Amsterdam. Her character appeared and I was like, please don't ever leave. You're so good on this. And it was exciting to like know a face and know her work and be like, hey, and she's from Austin. And, you know, there was lots of excitement. Lots of things.
Noah Face was my stage name.
Noah Face was your stage name?
I can't get my computer to
I
let
sent
me
you
back
so
in.
Many articles and this week. I'm sorry I bombarded you.
No, it's good. Well, normally they're already, I'm seeing them anyway. So it's not a bombardment.
Not everything.
Not
I
everything.
Send you.
Sometimes.
Sometimes. There's sometimes. A special little nugget in there for
okay,
you.
Okay. The other person in this is James Cavalli, who used to be a, he was an intern at. Oh, shoot. What theater? Oh, he was at the Olney in Maryland. And then he saw Spring Awakening, on Broadway, the Deaf West version. And which, by the way, was directed by a hearing person.
Yeah, I know. I was surprised there wasn't a co-director, but that's a whole nother.
Yeah, it's a whole nother conversation. Yes. But as Brian Cheslick of Deaf Austin Theater, he did a post recently really strongly suggesting that any hearing person that does a fully ASL production, not like just one character, that they should have a co-director that is deaf, not just an associate, not just someone on the team, but actually a co-director that has real decision-making power. And I agree. We agree.
Which they are doing on this.
They
we
are
should
indeed.
Say.
Yeah.
But so there's. I don't think we ever said that we said Music Man in the company, but we didn't say that there was a deaf actor playing the lead.
Well, yeah. I mean, one would make that assumption, but that is true. So they are doing a shadow version where the deaf actors will be voiced and the voiced actors will be ASL interpreted.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it is a combination. So I believe it's roughly 50-50 hearing and deaf. So it's going to be a 10-piece orchestra. And they do have a barbershop quartet doing Light a Rose, I'm Home Again, Rose.
That's so cool.
Etc. They're going to do the whole thing, not just that line.
I just thought it was a really cool musical choice and challenge and would be interesting. I don't like, again, disclaimer, Music Man's not a musical I care for. I do love some music from it.
I do like it, though.
But I never really liked
it. I mean, it's fraught these days.
It is.
The subject matter is not really good for our present way of thinking about people. But I like it.
I'd like to know. I guess that's why I would like to see this version with Hugh and Sutton. Because I'd like to know. They said they made changes and updated. And I'd like to know what that is.
Well, I'll tell you, as someone, did you see the updated version of... Just You Wait, Henry Higgins, Just You Wait,
My Fair Lady.
Did you see that updated version? Well, they said the same thing.
I know, and I remember
and
you telling me afterwards.
One itsy tiny little thing at the very end that I don't think makes up for the entire show.
Not one iota could save it, huh?
I don't think a little thing could change it.
That's
I think
not the right
in
word.
Order to
yeah, you have to look at the whole content.
Correct. and a good example of how they approached some of that stuff was the film of West Side Story that Spielberg
correct.
Just
yes.
did.
Yes, good example,
thank
Lisa.
You. Thank you. I'm filled with good examples.
Oh, that's a good example.
So did you go to the Texas Performing Arts announcement of their season?
I did not.
You didn't? You
I
said you
did
were.
I did not. I was unable to with a migraine of mass proportions.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I had a debilitating migraine on Thursday.
Yeah, well, and this was the first year that we didn't go. And
I know. I was so bummed out that you weren't going to be able to make it, and I was going to go solo and bring my brother. I know. Casey was going to go
name my fourth
out.
Book.
There you go.
I believe Casey was with us last time we went there in person.
No, because it was one of the only things I went out during the pandemic with you when we went.
Oh, I thought
to
Casey
the last
was there
one.
With us.
No, I just think you and I had such a good time and...
Which we did. We just,
so many
which just,
people.
Which just added a Casey.
We just added him in our head. Because he's fun. He's fun when he hangs out with us.
He is. Oh, it's funny. Not only did I not open it on my theater, it's not in my... it's not in my...
Well, I epically failed too because today's the one day I left my computer at home where I don't have it open.
Well, there quickly. Are... I mean, there was nothing in the season that like totally thrilled me. Although they are having... a concentration on dance this year.
Yes.
And Dance Theater of Harlem.
We wanted more dance. Remember, we did say after last year, we were like, we'd love more dance because mm-hmm. the dance is good.
Yeah. And I know Dance Theater of Harlem is one of the companies coming in.
Phenomenal.
Phenomenal. There are two theater pieces in there, neither of which totally thrilled me, but one of those, you know, if you remember last year, they did this Artisan's Residency Program, and mm-hmm. they're doing the same thing again this year. And one of the theater pieces, and I would encourage you to go to Texas Performing Arts, texasperformingarts.org, and check out their season, even though I can't say it, and I apologize. I have no idea where it is on my computer. This is why I need to go back to paper, I think.
Well, I mean, paper just recycle and reuse
just
your paper.
Disappear. But to check out their season and check out some of the things that are doing. And it's a good idea to support some of the work that they're doing. Bob Bursey has really changed the timbre of that organization.
He has. And he's such a good individual and kind. And yes.
Agreed. Agreed. Okay.
We haven't spoken to him in a while, actually. I feel like we should speak.
We haven't. I saw him somewhere just recently, and I thought the same thing. So today in theater history, as you might imagine.
What happened today?
In theater history. You know, by this time every year, the Tony nominations have just been announced. And, you know, theater news pretty much takes a dive as soon as that happens. Mm-hmm. And such is the case here. There are only two openings. One is Invitation to Murder in 1934. I don't know if they said it that way.
I was just thinking, I hope that's how it was.
In 1973, Nash at Nine, which was a musical about 73? And by Ogden Nash, who I love. I did a show. Ogden Nash
is
known for...
fascinating to me. 1973?
Yeah. Ogden Nash, if you don't know who he is, he is a poet known for doggerel mm-hmm. and light verse. I love him. We did a show in acting school years ago, and we called it the Golden Trashery of Ogden Nashery.
Okay, that's a great title.
This show, I don't have the facts in front of me, but it previewed for 2 weeks, or previewed for just a few days, and closed after 2 weeks. It had very few performances, didn't do well. I couldn't find any music from
it. I would love to learn more about that. That's one, you know, you and I really, we always say, but we're going to take a field trip, and we're going to go in these yep. Lincoln Center Library and go look at all this stuff we talk
yes.
about.
And then I have three birthdays. Bob Merrill. He was born in 1920. Howard Ashman, born in 1950. And may he rest in peace. Well, may they all rest in peace. But may he rest in peace. Bob Saget was born in 1956. This was his birthday.
Ouch.
I know. So we're going to change things up a little bit, do something that we don't typically do when we go between sections. This is a piece called I'm a Pleasure to Shop For. And it is an Ogden Nash poem. Read by Ogden Nash. And in truth and honesty, I did edit this a little bit for time.
Okay.
Since nobody gives me Christmas presents anymore, I shall console myself by compiling a list of Christmas presents that I do not want. I do not want a lamp made out of an umbrella stand, or a coffee table made out of an old wagon wheel, or a fire screen made out of a leftover piece of trellis, or indeed anything made out of or made to look like anything else. I do not want a novel written by a young genius in the earnest belief that nothing awful has ever happened before to anyone but him, certainly not to us dowdy duffers and stodgy codgers, nor tickets to the new musical by the smart boys who think they have discovered the secret of Hammerstein and Rogers. Since I am crazy about harshness and unpleasant aftertaste, I do not want a milder, less irritating cigarette, no matter how scientific the tests. For me, please, no bottled martinis, no sweetbreads, no cottage cheese with or without chives, no blinis in sour cream, indeed, neither sour cream nor blinis. If you will just not come across with any one of the above and make it snappy, you will also make one dear old gentleman's Christmas very, very happy.
There it is, Ogden Nash, the Golden Treasury of Ogden Nashery.
Ogden Nash.
And we're going to jump right into our interview with Zach Theater and Somebody Loves You, Mr. Hatch. Here it is.
Nicole, remember when we were talking last week about Sweet Charity?
I do.
Love that show, and I don't love that show all at the same time.
It's very random, Lisa.
I believe it's very problematic. But there is a song in there that I really love called Somebody Loves Me.
It is a good song. There's a lot of good songs in that show.
It's true. And I know that our guests that are sitting here on Zoom with us are wondering, where's she going with this Sweet Charity thing? And now they understand, because I've got some of the cast members of Somebody Loves You, Mr. Hatch, now playing at Zach Theater, written and directed by Alan Robertson.
And you know what? It's another one with a lot of good songs.
It's another one, of course, because it's written and by Alan Robertson. And here with us is Chloe Vandergraff. Hi, Chloe. And we have Paul Sanchez. Hi, Paul.
Hello.
Somebody named Nathan Jerkins is here with us.
Good to see you. Hi.
And Amber Quick.
Hello. I've missed you both so much.
And I should tell our radio audience, we're recording this on Zoom. We're fortunate enough to not only have these cast members, but they are in costume.
They are. We got full costume on the stage with some stage, like a little bit of lighting. Like, I feel special today on this afternoon.
And Nathan just pointed out his microphone just to make sure we knew that they were mic'd. So somebody tell me a little bit about what this show is.
The show is adapted from Eileen Spinelli's children's book, Somebody Loves You, Mr. Hatch. And it's just a celebration of making brave choices and finding your community and reaching out to lend a hand or just say hi, and the difference that can make in somebody's day. And it's a really, really beautiful, touching show and experience. And I think I can speak for all of us when I say that it's an honor to get to do it every day. Truly.
Well, I know you guys have been playing already for several weeks, and I've heard nothing but great things about it. I have not been able to get over there to see it, and hopefully I'll be able to catch a matinee next week. But I'm very excited to have you on. Heard nothing but good things. This is a Theater for Young Audience show, but this is good for those of us that might be slightly older than a Theater for Young Audience. I must tell you this, all of you, nodding does not work on the radio.
Got it. Well, I was going to say, I like to think of this show as sort of being in the best kind of Disney and Pixar tradition, in that it's a show that's really for all the adults in the room, but it's just masquerading as a kids show, right? So yes, this is a Theater for Young Audience show. It's not a Theater for Young Audience show, right?
I love the analogy of Disney and Pixar, which I like to call Pisney.
I'll buy it.
That's so, better than the alternative. I don't think we can say that on the radio.
We can do anything we want. Let's talk about your characters. Chloe, tell us about your character.
Melanie is such a fun character to play. She's very outgoing and spunky. I mean, she's spying on her neighbor, so that says a little something about her, but not in a creepy way, like a super like just curious about this lonely man that's like living in her neighborhood. And throughout the story they develop like a really great relationship, and she helps Mr. Hatch and like really cares deeply about him and helps him come out of his shell and become like such an amazing and like caring person in the community. And then at the end brings the whole community together to celebrate like his life and like everything he's done and help him become like the best person he can be. So it's been super fun to play this role because she's really great and like loves to help people.
And I should tell folks that you are, so there is, and I hate to make these kinds of classifications, but there's and I'm using air quotes, an adult cast and a more youthful cast. And you're part of that youthful cast.
Yes.
And the incredible thing about this show is that all three Melanies, they carry the show. They are driving the entire show. Mm-hmm. I joke that my role is just props management. I'm there to make sure that the props get to the right place while the Melanies just completely carry the story beautifully, I might add.
Okay, well, so now you have to make an explanation. Since some people may not have seen this show, The Melanies? So I guess there is more than one Melanie.
Yes, there are. There are three of us who share the role. And it's super fun because each of us have like a different kind of take on the character. And during rehearsals, we got to learn like a lot from each other. Like I would see one of the other Melanies do something like, I can add that to my performance. But it's super fun like watching them do the show because it's so much different from how I do it. And we each like bring something else to the show, which is really exciting to watch.
Wonderful. Chloe, tell me, who are the other two Melanies?
Stella Freigensberg and Lila Gonzalez.
Wonderful. And I have to say this, and I'll ask this to the three other actors that are here. I once shared a role with somebody in a show called House of Yes. And we could not have played the role more different from one another. And I always sort of felt bad for the supporting cast around us because they had to, as you know, acting is reacting. They had to act differently. So for the three of you, how is it working with three different actors playing that role?
It's fun. It's amazing. The energy that they all have is a lot. And I get to feed off of that because I'm old and not as young. And so the energy that they give off, I feel, and it gives me the energy to do the show, I feel.
Yeah. So, Paul Sanchez, do you feel that that your character changes a bit from actor to actor?
A little bit. Just depends on, you know, what they're giving me. But it's never anything wild or anything. I have to be like, oh, here we go. Let's see what they're gonna do. It's always smart. It's a smart move. It's a smart choice, mm-hmm. and it's made, and it comes from love. And wanting to tell a beautiful story.
Wonderful. Amber, tell us about who you're playing.
Oh, I play Miss Todd. So in the book, there's a Mr. Todd that runs the deli counter. And so for the adaptation, Alan made Mr. Todd a Miss Todd and Melanie's mother. Play the grocery shop keep, and then we kind of there's a lot of audience interaction in the show, and so we all have our pre-show jobs to assign so I've Miss Todd and then it's there are lots
mischief
of
maker with the audience.
Audience, right. Yes, audience caretaker. That's an excellent way to put it. Yeah.
An ACT. We love those in the business. Yeah. Nathan, and you're playing the teacher
too. She has a lot of her lines are very relatable to some adults.
Oh, yeah.
very relatable. So it's
okay.
It's,
well, now that you said that, you have to give us an example.
Everything's falling apart. It's too much. This stain matches the other stain. So
got that going for me.
Interestingly enough, This Stain Matches the Other Stain was my fourth book.
Yeah, there we go.
And Nathan, you are playing the titular Mr. Hatch.
I get to play Mr. Hatch, which is really interesting and a lot of fun. So I spend like half of the show in some ways like moping through my life while all of these people act around me in a way that is just hilarious to experience. And the arc of this show is Mr. Hatch, a person who feels completely alone and isolated and forgotten and unloved, discovering that he does have neighbors and he can have friends. And, you know, if he stepped out there and gave it a shot, there would be people who would love him, which is a wonderful thing to experience and sort of culminates in a song right at the climax where basically I sit in the middle of the stage and everyone sings about how much they love Mr. Hatch, which, you know, I'm not Mr. Hatch, but like I get to receive that. And in some of the kids' shows, even the kids in the audience, because it's a pretty simple melody that's repeated over and over. There are some shows where like an audience of like 200 elementary school kids, like look at you and sing about how much they love you. And whoever gets to experience that? Like, it's just heart melting. And I'm tremendously grateful to get to experience that over and over again.
What does that music sound like?
Somebody loves you.
Mm-hmm. Somebody loves you. Somebody loves you.
It's
like that. It repeats a lot. Yeah, yeah. It's super fun song.
The lyrics I can probably pick up pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Anyway. Well, that's awesome. So this was written and created by Alan Robertson. So he's also directing it. So he's taking along a lot. Alan is really well known here in Austin and around the country and the world. It's part of the Biscuit Brothers and the work he does here with Zach Theater and the work he does with Summer Stock Austin. How was it working with him? Did y'all enjoy it?
Yes, he created the most amazing environment to work in here. And it's kind of crazy because when I was younger, I was a huge fan of the Biscuit Brothers. So it's like my younger self's dream come true to be working on a show with the Alan Robertson. It's just crazy to think about how I was such a big fan when I'm younger. And I'm still a huge fan. He created the most safe and heartwarming like environment to work in. Like, we were free to try things and make mistakes and to fail and grow with our characters. And that just made the show so special. And it made it like a family to be like in this theater. It made it feel like a home coming in every day for rehearsals and shows. He just made it very, very special.
Lovely. That is wonderful. That sounds
well said there, Chloe.
Yeah. Yeah. If you know Alan, you know that his goal is to make the world a better place, and he just happens to use theater to do it. And so it was truly an incredible experience. Always.
Wonderful.
Anything for Alan Robertson. Always a yes for Alan.
Always a yes.
There you go. So I know y'all been playing for 3 weeks, and I think we just have one or two more weeks left. When does the show close?
We close May 22nd, right?
A week from Sunday, mm-hmm. Whatever date that is.
That is correct. I have the notes in front of me. You are correct. Yeah. And where can folks go to get more information about this show?
ZachTheater.org.
Yep.
For information and tickets.
Yeah, well, great. It was such a pleasure to have you on the show. And as I said, I hope to get to see it. We've been pretty busy ourselves, so we haven't been. That's the royal we. I don't really use that all that often, but now.
You know what? We don't need to hear any more of
your
me
conundrum.
Talking. I'm done talking.
Conundrum?
We're running out of time. You know, I've got DJ Mark here. He's like trying once again to grab the microphone away from me. And we do have 20 more seconds, so I'm going to keep it for that amount of time. But we've done it. We're done for the.
Another show,
and we're just going to go out with a few seconds of We Want to Know from A Strange Loop. This is the new Broadway version that just came out.
Very exciting.
Yeah, so here it goes. We'll see you next week when we look at what's happening off stage and on the air. Okay, DJ Mark, it's coming.
We want to know what's going on in New York. We want to know.